Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, and welcome to the Principal Financial Group's Women in Business Teleclass Series with your moderator, Pamela Mitchell. Please go ahead.
Hi, I'm Pamela Mitchell, the founder and CEO of the Reinvention Institute, which is a dynamic organization devoted to individual and business transformation. And I also write a popular column for Women in Business for Inc.com, the website of Inc. Magazine, which is the handbook for the American entrepreneur. And I also want to add my greetings for a good afternoon and welcome to the Principal Women in Business Teleclass Series. Today I'm serving as the moderator for this exciting program, so let's get started. First of all, let me thank you for taking the time to call in today to today's teleclass, which is brought to you by the Principal Financial Group. We hope these classes conducted over the course of the year give you an edge in growing your business. Speaking to the title of the program on planning for the unexpected, which I know everybody's all excited to dive into, September is National Life Insurance Awareness Month. Should you want to seek out information about the benefits of life insurance, or if you need any help with employee benefits for your employees or individual financial services for yourself, the principal is here to help. Give us a call at 515-362-0112 or visit principal.com/teleclass. Also, just sit back and relax during today's call. Don't worry about taking notes. We will summarize all the key details from today's class. And as you know, at the end of the call, for the last 15 minutes, we will have a live Q&A following our speaker discussion. So to queue up early for that Q&A, simply press star 1 on your phone, and that way you'll be in the queue to have your question answered. So first, let's get started, and let me introduce Victoria. We're going to hear from Victoria Colligan, who created Ladies Who Launch, which provides women with resources, community, and inspiration to propel their businesses and dreams. Some of their offerings include incubator workshops, online content, business tools, social networking, and events. Victoria has been featured on the Today Show, in the New York Times, and in many other prestigious media outlets. Prior to starting Ladies Who Launch, Victoria worked as Director of Content and Business Development for Amsale, a high-end wedding gown designer, where she relaunched their website, started an online magazine, and developed numerous strategic partnerships. Victoria began her career as a corporate lawyer at Kelly, Dry, and Warren in New York. She holds a JD MBA from Case Western University in Cleveland, Ohio, and a BA with honors from Brown University in Rhode Island. You can check out all of her activities and her business at Ladies Who Launch. That's LadiesWholaunch.com, ladieswholaunch.com, for more information. So today's mission for our class is pretty simple. It's to give you a roadmap to develop a plan for any bump in the road that your company should encounter. And given everything that's going on in the news with the economic turmoil and all the market uncertainty, this is a very timely topic. So anything that your company might encounter, employees leaving, IT disasters, planning how to navigate the current economic situation, this is what we're going to be talking about today. So without further delay, I'm thrilled to introduce Victoria. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Pamela. Thanks for that very kind introduction.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. So let's get started hearing a little bit about you. How did you get the vision for Ladies Who Launch, and, you know, how's it changed over time?
Well, that's a great question. It's very interesting because I think oftentimes the idea that you have when you start a business is not always where you end up in the evolution of a business. I started Ladies Who Launch really because during the course of my career, after having practiced law for several years and being in finance for a period of time, I went to work for several female-owned businesses and in the weddings kind of arena, and was working really closely in strategic development and partnership and strategy, as well as getting involved in their websites. And I began to notice that there were many, many women around me, both the women that I worked for, the women that were buying their products and services, and the women that I was connecting with in New York at the time who were starting businesses. And I saw that there was really a trend. What I found was that these women did not seem to be reading traditional business publications, you know, like the Wall Street Journal and Forbes, and they also did not seem to be joining traditional women's networking groups, and there didn't seem to be an avenue for them out there. I basically, the idea for Ladies Who Launch was hatched because I wanted to share the stories, the success stories of these women in a very inspirational way, and in not only how they were starting their businesses, but also how they were juggling their lives. And so it really began as a weekly email. It has evolved now into a real community and a resource destination for women who are launching and growing their businesses. What happened was after we started sending this email out on a weekly basis with a different success story and gaining subscribers, we had a lot of communication to us about wanting to join something in their communities, and we didn't have anything to offer. So I partnered up with my former business partner, and we created a program that we then took nationwide, and we created local in-person communities called incubators around the country. So Ladies Who Launch started online. It moved offline. And now it has evolved into a resource online for women where you can get everything from legal documents to marketing tools to, you know, PR opportunities, really all kinds of resources to both start and grow your business.
Well, that's really exciting, and it sounds like you really just sort of went with what your market was asking for, that you had an idea about what you wanted to deliver, but then the market started to ask for more.
That's a great point, and I think that paying attention to what it is that your market wants, first being able to identify that audience and then paying attention to what they're asking you for is a great way to evolve your strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dive a little bit into today's title, because I know that it sounds really nice and easy when you say, okay, I had this vision, I started this email newsletter, and all of a sudden we grew. But I'm sure there were lots of challenges along the way and lots of unexpected bumps in the road. So what challenges have you faced, and how did you react to those obstacles as you were building Ladies Who Launch?
Well, I think, you know, I, like many women, and we've identified this through our surveys and interviews that we've done with thousands of women across the country, I, like many women, started the business very organically and really from passion around really wanting to share the success stories of women in a different way and to use those success stories to inspire other women to follow in their footsteps. And it was a very organic approach in the beginning. The way that the business grew was through word of mouth, through people telling each other about the email, through my being out in the community and talking about it, and it was very passion-based. The challenge, you know, one of the challenges that I faced was in this business was really how do we grow this business strategically so that we can grow it to the next level and take it to become, you know, bigger than just an organic sort of viral word-of-mouth approach, and also what is the revenue model tied to this business? So I really wasn't sure in the very beginning how we were ever going to make money off this business.
Okay.
And, you know, that was very challenging.
Let me ask you a question. How long did it take for you to get to that point? How long were you in business before you started to say, you know, this is starting to grow and I've got to figure out what the revenue model is and how to make this into a real business?
It was a couple years, really. I'd say 2 years before I really had any idea of what the revenue model would be. And I might add that because Ladies Who Launch was and still is, first and foremost, a media business, an online business, the other way to prove growth besides your actual revenue is through proving traffic or an audience for your content. And so I was very focused on developing an audience and growing the subscriber base, and I just kept thinking, well, if I keep doing that, then at least I have a platform from which to either sell products to or, you know, make money in some form, and the money will come, if you will. And I think that a lot of women do start businesses this way. They have a passion around something. It's organic at first, and they believe that somehow the money will come.
Okay, but as you said, you know, that can be a very challenging place because there's that moment where it needs to shift from the passion-based and the organic approach into a structured business model that produces a significant, a viable revenue stream is really the better word for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the entrepreneur at her core is always in conflict around being the eternal optimist but also having to be a realist.
Mm.
And sometimes, you know, we are so passionate about our endeavors and so sure that we can succeed because, I mean, it really takes that kind of drive and motivation and ambition to keep going every day, not lose the momentum, get yourself up in the morning. You're one person and you have to make it happen every day on your own. And so you essentially have to be an optimist. But when you are looking at growing your business and trying to really, you know, figure out what is the revenue model and how do I break even and what is my cash flow analysis and all those sorts of things, it really takes being a realist and looking at things in a very sort of strategic way and being willing to let go of certain things that aren't working and being willing to kind of pay attention to what is working. And there may be surprises, you know, when you start to really look at it that way. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we, as entrepreneurs, that we don't do in the beginning that we should do more quickly is hire experts to work with us.
Okay.
And, you know, for me, I in the last 2 years, I've started to work with a lot of experts, whether it's in finance, in law, or in the industry itself that you're in. Either getting a board of directors or a board of advisors together, I mean, you'd be surprised how many people are really willing to go out of their way and help the budding entrepreneur, especially in the beginning.
So what you're saying then is really, if you know, I'm hearing you say that the entrepreneur is really sort of the eternal optimist, and that's really what it takes to actually build the business. But at some point, you need that realistic person as well, and that realistic person can be either you or you can actually go hire the expertise to really kind of take a look at the business.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's interesting because at least for me, you know, I had a very varied background. So
mm-hmm.
I had, you know, I have my JD MBA and I'd worked in business, I'd worked in finance, I had, you know, worked for these lifestyle sort of weddings oriented businesses, and I really thought that I knew everything. I mean, and I think that's like what, you know, I think, as entrepreneurs, you kind of have to be a jack of all trades.
Mm-hmm.
But at a certain point, what you find out is that your knowledge, no matter how much education and experience you have, to get really deep into one area takes a lot of years and a lot of commitment. And there are other people who have that and can contribute value to your organization with their expertise.
Okay. So it sounds like in all of that, you know, being sort of the jack of all trades can cause you to take on too much.
Exactly. I mean, I think, and this was another thing, you know, that we've talked about, is that it's really important to kind of tame your desire to do too many things and to focus on one thing and do it well. And, you know, especially in starting Ladies Who Want, I saw so much opportunity, and I think that's what happens when we start our companies. We start to see so many opportunities and things that people need and, you know, expansion ideas for our original product and ways to grow it. And really the fact is it's better to produce an excellent product that's focused and do it well before you start to move on to something else or expand it. And that was definitely a lesson that took me a long time to learn because I was not a technology expert, yet I had all these ideas for technology platforms for, you know, to help women launch their businesses, and I had to resist the temptation to build too much too fast and risk it not being a quality product.
Do you have, like, a specific example of an idea that you had that you tried out there and then you realized, this is kind of taking us off of our core mission?
Yeah, well, actually, one thing that we did that didn't work, but you may have thought that it would have been successful, is we tried to launch an e-commerce store so that women could come to Ladies Who Launch and sell their products and services through our, you know, by using our platform. And we actually partnered with eBay to do this. We built a special eBay, Ladies Who Launch eBay store. And I still can't identify exactly why it didn't work, and I still believe that there's an opportunity there, but it was not successful. And I think that the reason it wasn't successful was because we really couldn't focus on it.
Okay.
It was maybe not user-friendly enough, too complicated, took too long to figure out for people. They could go to eBay directly, you know, all of these sorts of things. And so even though it was sort of a break-even proposition, it ended up distracting our user from doing other things on the site that may have added more value. So eventually we took that down, but it probably should have come down a lot sooner than, you know, we waited a little bit too long, I believe.
That's a great example because, as you said, it sounds like a fabulous idea, but understanding that the real point was to have your consumers or your users do certain things on your site and to say, is this really contributing to the level that we wanted to contribute or is it a distraction, seems to be like a really challenging thing for an entrepreneur to do.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And especially with the online business, you know, you really have to be very focused in on, you know, what is it that these, when they're coming to the site, what exactly are they doing, you know, and where are they going? And then where do you want them to go and why, you know? So it's always asking that question, to what end is this? To what end is this important? What is this ultimately going to do for me, for my business to really grow or take off or to break even or make money? And I think that, you know, it's another thing that was important for us to do was to put in some protective mechanisms, and so we ended up having a lot of, you know, there were times when our website would go down, and, you know, this was, for a website to go down for 1 hour means you lose X number of subscribers or users to your web, you know, traffic to your website. So we began to start to put some real backup servers and things like that in place, but, you know, again, that requires an investment, but one that we thought was worth it.
Okay. So did you have a plan for that up front, or was that sort of learned through hard experience?
You know, I have to say that the challenges and the obstacles that I have been faced with in the business were, I guess, sort of took me by surprise. And,
mm-hmm.
and I hate to say that because it's funny. I mean, I think all of the education in the world, you know, I studied business. I mean, that's what I went to school for.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, when put into my own situation and my own business, did not see the things coming that came at us. And I think that, again, just from the experiences I've had from talking to many women who've launched their own businesses, that there are a lot of obstacles that you face and that you need to deal with, and challenges that come up that are things that are very surprising. And you know, it's important to sort of keep your positive mindset, because there's always a creative solution, but it's really about, you know, it's about being able to have a clear mind and a clear head so you can identify solutions.
Yes. You know, I actually had a mentor once say to me that the role of a talented entrepreneur was to really be a problem solver, because that's what was happening really in businesses. You think it's about building, but it's really about solving problems.
It truly is, and in fact, all of the people that I've hired, one of the kind of prerequisites in my head has always been, are they a problem solver, and can they figure things out? And you know, surrounding yourself with people who are problem solvers is almost more important than finding somebody who, you know, knows exactly how to do something, because you can train people to do things, but you can't really train that mindset of being able to be resourceful.
That's a great, great point. And that leads us into another key piece of growing a business, which is employees. And so talk to us about some of your experiences with key employees and surrounding yourself with good ones, and then what happens if the good ones that you rely on actually decide to leave?
Well, you know, Pamela, it's interesting, and this is another thing that kind of took me by surprise. We had one employee who was she's an associate and what I would call a real worker bee, very organized, got things done, very methodical, you know, never missed a deadline, that kind of person. And she was just incredibly hardworking. And she just one day, you know, came in to my office and said, I'm leaving. I don't want to do this anymore. And
so
I had no idea. No idea. I thought she was happy. Basically, she had started her own sort of little, I'd given her a project that I thought was incredible, which was launching our directory, and she kind of took that from start to finish and figured it out almost entirely on her own. I mean, it took very little startup investment of time and energy on my part to get her moving on it. And she sort of finished that project and came in, and it could have been that she's 20, you know, that she was 25, and, you know, when you're 25, you wonder what else is out there and all of those things.
Right.
But I was just very, very surprised and not really prepared. And so I think, but at the same time, you know, I felt, it was funny, I kind of, this sort of gnawed at me for a while, just on a very emotional level, like what did I do wrong and how did I not see this coming? And, you know, I kind of consider myself to have good instincts about these kinds of things. And then I just sort of told myself, you know, you kind of just have to let people go sometimes.
Right.
And just let them do what they're going to do, you know, and kind of let your head clear of it, because you can't, you can spend a lot of time trying to figure it out, but in the end, they're, if they're going to go, they're going to go. And so, you know, the best thing to do in that situation, I mean, there are kind of two key things that I like to think about. And one is, you know, to really make sure that you have, that there is some redundancy in what your organization can do when it's in a small, you know, when it's small, when it, you know, you only have 5 to 10 employees, maybe you only have 2 employees, but they should be able to almost do each other's jobs to some degree. I mean, at the same time, there's a tension with growth to have clearly defined roles and responsibilities. So there's a balancing act between those two things. But when you, if you have certainty that one person can do someone else's job if they had to, it makes the pain of letting someone go a little bit easier. And then the other thing that I think is really important is that you make sure that you surround the employees with each other, that they're all very strong. In other words, that you don't have a weak link in the organization. And because what happens is if there's somebody that you're doubting or somebody who's really not pulling their weight, you won't lose that person. You'll lose the good people, because the good people aren't going to stick around.
Right.
And it's very hard to do, because you may like somebody a lot as a person, or they may have been with you from the beginning, and you know, but maybe they just couldn't grow with you in a certain way. And you know when you're at that point, you have an instinct about it.
So Victoria, do you have any suggestions about how our listeners can sort of plan for these things? Because as you said earlier, I mean, when you're starting your own business as a woman entrepreneur, it just gets so busy with, your focus is so much on, okay, let me just get the business running. How can we, in the midst of all of that, still kind of lay out a plan to say what happens if my key employee leaves, or, you know, how do you have that sort of laid out in advance?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And this is like the stuff that nobody really wants to think about.
Exactly. We're like, oh, let's be busy.
Right. It's the unfun stuff is what I call it. And I definitely am of the camp that I don't want to deal with it either. But it's super important. And, I mean, State Farm Insurance is one of our sponsors for this reason. It's super important to get as early as you can to start putting some protection in place for yourself and for your business. And I mean, one big thing that you can do right away is get business insurance. And first of all, it's very reasonably priced. Annual fees are quite low, especially in the beginning, and I don't think most people realize that. And also, you want to do this even before you have revenues in your company, because before you have revenues, you usually have assets. And assets are things like materials that you might use to make something, or office space, or a computer, or a printer, or frankly, yourself.
Right.
And you know, you want to think about having life insurance and also directors and officers insurance as you start to grow. But business insurance is the very first thing to do. And then there's some other pretty easy, low-cost things that you can do to protect yourself. One is, you know, to trademark your name, your business name. And
did you do that up front?
I did. I did that right away, because a big part of our business was our brand. And Ladies Who Launch being so catchy, and also, interestingly enough, once you trademark your brand, you also need to create a paper trail protecting it. So, you want to put those Google searches in place so you're getting alerted every time the name is used. And somebody else might be using it illegally.
Oh, that's a great suggestion. Google Alerts is like the best for that now. That saves a lot of money because in the past, you know, lawyers would have to do little searches and things like that. And now you can just set up a Google Alert and you'll know every time it's mentioned.
Yeah, and it's really easy to do. It's free, as you know. And the other thing you can do is you can go to USPTO, the United States Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO, I think it's .com. Although
it's .gov, actually.
.gov, okay. It's USPTO.gov, and you can do your own preliminary searches. So, in other words, before you invest time and money and energy into a real lawyer or attorney around this, you can start to at least find out if anybody's using the name that you really want. And you know, do those searches first, then you can, you know, just hire, get a lawyer and spend, you know, just a very little amount to trademark it in, you can start just with one country and in one area. So, you know, it's pretty reasonably priced, but you're going to want to do that right away. And the other thing you're going to want to do is make sure you get a domain name for your website that is the name of your business or close enough or very, very consistent with your business name that you're trademarking, because you don't want to have any inconsistencies in your brand and your message and all of those things.
And did you do that right away as well?
I did do that right away. And I can tell you that I'm a frantic domain name searcher. I love to think of new names and ideas for businesses. I think I'm a serial entrepreneur. And it's really almost impossible at this point to get any two words together. So you can get three words. And you can get a lot of .net, .tv, and those kinds of things. And you can also do dashes and hyphens and dots and things like that. To, you know, but so just that's kind of the, if you don't want to spend money. Now, you can always go out and try to buy the name that somebody else has, but then that's very complicated. And if you haven't really proven out your product and your business yet, I wouldn't waste the money on it.
Mm. So this is starting to sound like a little bit of a sort of pre-planning checklist, as you were. As you begin, if you have a great business idea, to say, okay, here are the things that I have to check off the list. You know, the first thing that you mentioned, which was business insurance, is just a great tip because that's not something that most people think about. You know, we kind of think, oh, God, I can't afford insurance. And, you know, of course, we're lucky today that Principal's actually sponsoring this teleclass because there's a resource right there for it. But it's something that, you know, we kind of think down the road once we're already making lots of money that we should be checking into. But to know that we should be checking into that right up front is just a really great key to this plan. And then also kind of thinking about sort of trademarking your business and having people, you know, say, all right, up front, this is what our name is going to be, and protecting it up front and creating a paper trail is also a really interesting piece because, again, we don't really know that. We kind of think, all right, if I have a name, it's a great name, I'll just use it, and then we can end up getting locked out of it as well.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I think is a good idea, and I did not do this in the beginning, is to really open a separate bank account.
Mm.
And to keep you really want to keep your personal finances separate from your business because you'd be really surprised at how much you just sort of start to write things off in your head mentally,
mm-hmm.
like going to Kinko's and getting business cards or photocopying something that you send out to somebody or making a sign. And, you know, you just sort of put your credit card down and don't pay attention. And it's really important to understand, to have an understanding from very early on how much you're spending money and how money is flowing in and out of the company so that you can get a real handle, because that's going to be your foundation for a cash flow analysis, especially as you start to have revenues in your company.
Right. And cash is king when it comes to business. People think, oh, you know, I've got so much revenue. But revenue and cash are actually two different things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, in the beginning of starting a business, most people are operating, I mean, at least we were, on a cash basis.
Mm-hmm.
And which means we didn't really, I mean, to be honest, we didn't pay much attention to what had accrued or what had been fulfilled on. We just thought, okay, we have this much cash in the bank, so we can do this. And cash is king because you can keep investing if the money's coming in, let's say, earlier than what you're fulfilling on.
Right.
You can keep investing in the business to grow it. But, you know, you also have to be conscious of the fact that, you know, if you do get revenue in early, you need to fulfill on that. So it's,
okay,
you know, a balancing act.
It's a balancing act. But in today's, you know, economic uncertainties, definitely making sure that you have a very strong cash position is going to be a critical piece of being able to weather any kind of ups and downs.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were talking about separating the business from personal. How long did it take you to do that?
Oh, my gosh. well, it's interesting because when I first partnered with my business partner, we entered into a joint venture type of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so we each had sort of had our own businesses, and we came together to work together in a joint venture type of way. So I was sort of financing my part of the business, and she was financing her part of the business. And even at that point, when we were really partners, before we really became full partners, I was truly just operating kind of fly by the seat of the pants, you know, and not
mm-hmm.
really paying much attention to what I was spending or what the monthly costs were. And I mean, again, it goes back to the optimism. I was really focused on just building the audience, building a great product, and the creativity, and that's the part I wanted to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, I think that's a dangerous place to be in for too long, because you really, if you want growth, if you want to have financial and monetary success, you really have to look at it differently. And I mean, you can still have the passion and the creativity, but you really have to see, like, what can I leverage and sell? I mean, now we're looking at our own business even right now and just saying, what is the product that we can really sell? And we have so many assets, but how do we package them up to make them a compelling, you know, value proposition?
Right.
So that's, you know, for the business.
Okay. So it sounds like it was actually after you had your partner come in that you began to think about separating your finances.
Yes, I would say at that time, because it became more important to have clarity around it.
Okay.
You know, when she was there, because we had to really track, you know, I had to track everything because I was accountable to someone else and she was accountable to me.
Okay.
Which I think is, you know, is a great thing. I mean, I think partnerships are really great in that respect, especially if you can bring, you know, complementary skills to the table where you each have accountability to the other person. And it tends to, you know, to streamline your focus.
Right. I want to actually ask you a question about partnerships, but before that, I just want to take a moment to remind our listeners to begin getting into the queue to ask your question during our Q&A session by pressing *1 on your phone. So if you want to get into line to ask your question during our Q&A session, press *1. So, Victoria, I want to ask you about this whole partnership piece, because it sounds like you actually had a written partnership right up front. So can you say something about that in terms of the importance of having that as part of your plan?
Yeah, well, I think that's a great point. Actually, for the first year that we worked together in a joint venture situation, we
mm-hmm.
didn't have anything in writing.
Mm.
And, I mean, I'm a lawyer, so... But again, I didn't have my lawyer hat on. I had my eternal, optimistic entrepreneur hat on.
Uh-huh.
So it's really, you know, and you want things to happen as an entrepreneur quickly. So anything that delays the happening of things and the moving forward of things to an entrepreneur is like the kiss of death.
Yes.
So contracts sound really cumbersome and, you know, all these things. But at this point, I mean, it really is important. It worked out okay, because after the first year, we did end up putting a contract together, and that's when we actually became full partners. But it really forced us to value what we each were bringing to the table. We had to put a monetary value on each of the components that we brought to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only way that we could figure out how the equity should be structured or the percentages between us.
Okay.
You know, It's hard to value something when there aren't revenues, or when there are a certain number of revenues but there aren't other assets. And so, you know, we were really looking hard at what we were each contributing.
And it sounds like also putting that into writing forced you to plan, as contracts do, for the eventual dissolution, if that should happen. It forces you to look at the worst-case scenarios and then build in structures to deal with it.
Yes, also not a fun thing that an entrepreneur wants to do. But I must say, I'm glad that we did it, because my business partner and I are no longer business partners.
Mm.
So, I mean, it was very helpful to have an agreement in place and, you know, to be able to point to that agreement. And, you know, the other thing to remember about this, and this also goes to the topic of planning for the unexpected, I mean, things just change. You know, your business evolves. Partnerships change. You partner with different people. You bring in different people. You let go of different people. And it's really, you know, we have a tendency to not want to let go of things and to be too attached to a certain outcome. And really the only way you can grow is to let your attachment to a certain outcome go and to be open to the possibilities that exist out there of something new or something that could change it tremendously. And,
right.
you know, that. So I was forced to do that in my situation. And I've seen now I you know, I've identified many, many others who've gone through the same thing.
Yes, yes, yes. And it sounds like, you know, given that things change, I mean, that kind of leads us into the whole topic of the whole economic situation, as we see things can change tremendously and dramatically, as seemingly overnight. And so given all this economic turmoil and what's really an economic downturn right now, do you think it's a smart time to launch a business?
It's a very sort of, in the media is painting a very scary picture for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, so there's a couple things the way that I look at this. I mean, first of all, I think that one needs to be very open during this time because
mm-hmm.
With every crisis, there's always opportunity. There's always opportunity. And as you said, Pamela, it is a great time. You know, it can be a great time to start
right.
something new. And then the other thing is, you know, being able to kind of disassociate from the group panic that is out there in the world right now and not surrender to it, I think is important just for the mindset of the new launcher. I mean, you've got to just kind of tell yourself, I have a great idea, I'm hardworking, I'm going to put everything into this, and I'm just not going to buy into all this mindset out there. And if I can be a part of any positive messaging right now, that's what I would tell the world. And then I think that, you know, if you have an existing business, this is a really good time to strip it down to the essence and figure out what is it that's working and what is the real opportunity. And this kind of goes back to what we were talking about before of not trying to do too much.
Mm-hmm.
But we've actually gone through a restructuring at Ladies Who Launch in the last few weeks, and it's forced me as the founder to kind of take a really hard look at what's important. And when you take pieces away, when you take people out of the component, when you take components of the business out of the business, you start to see, it becomes very clear what your priorities are.
Mm.
It becomes very, very clear. But sometimes it takes a stripping away of things and maybe even, you know, not even within your control or seemingly you feel like it's out of your control to really get to the essence of what is the opportunity and what's the value proposition.
So it sounds like during an economic downturn that it really focuses you on the opportunity, because opportunities, just as you said, are always there. People always are making money. I mean, even though they're talking about a $700 billion bailout, people are being paid that $700 billion. You know, I think that's what we're forgetting. Like, somebody's getting paid that money, so that there are always opportunities out there. But in looking at your business in these sort of uncertain times, to say, what is the core opportunity, and just have that laser focus right on it to kind of ride the wave into the next upturn.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. The laser focus is really, it's really important. And it's funny because we've been talking to a lot of companies in the media space about strategic partnerships and, you know, things like that. And every single one of them has said to us, we are laser focused right now on XYZ strategy, and that's what we're focused on. And in other words, the point being, and by the way, in a lot of these cases, a partnership makes sense with them, but the point being, what you're offering to us or the value that you bring to us doesn't fit within our laser focused strategy right now, we're not doing it with you.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we as Ladies Who Launch have to be laser focused on our strategy and say, you know, if what you can offer us doesn't fit into our laser focus, then we're not going to go forward either, because it's just a distraction.
Right. That's right. So in terms of people who might be thinking of launching at this moment, you know, as opposed to people who already have their entrepreneurial businesses going. Do you have any kind of inspirational stories for them of other companies that might have launched during economic downturns?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, some very recognizable companies have launched during economic downturns, like General Electric, Disney, Hewlett-Packard, even Daily Candy, you know, weekly email that I sort of modeled my business after, was launched during an economic downturn, during the dot-com burst. And so there's really a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity out there. And the point is, what you want to think about is, and this goes for no matter when you're launching your product, but you really want to think about the value proposition. What is the value that you are bringing to your customer? And I think sometimes as women, we're so focused around our own passion around the product, our own creativity, mm-hmm. you know, our own kind of lifestyle choice in doing this, that we sometimes can lose sight of what is the value proposition to the end user. And also, you know, is your the market you're targeting, in other words, do enough people find that value? Can enough people see that value for you to actually have a viable business out of it? And, of course, all of those things are, you know, there's a lot of analysis that goes into all of that. But it's important to focus on the value proposition and then also to focus on how the value proposition changes over time. I mean, in our business, the inspirational stories were great in the beginning. Nobody was doing them. It was original. And that evolved into community, ultimately evolved into, I just want the nuts and bolts resources.
Mm.
And, you know, so what may have worked 4 or 5 years ago maybe doesn't work now, or maybe there's a lot of competition in the space. I mean, you know, we found for us, we recently revamped our incubator program, our in-person program, and because what we found was that a lot of people were offering similar in-person programs, and ours didn't stand out from the crowd.
Okay.
So it's distinguishing yourself and really what makes you unique and, you know, what's your unique value proposition and is the value, you know, appealing enough to a large enough audience that you can actually make money on it.
So it sounds like one of the gifts of actually starting a business during an economic downturn is that it forces you to ask those questions, whereas in an upswing, it's kind of like all boats rise in high tide. But during an economic mm-hmm. downturn, that you're forced to ask those tough questions.
You are, and you're more likely to bootstrap your idea,
mm-hmm.
meaning, you know, really conserving on every way that you possibly can and doing trades for certain things. I mean, and the mindset of that is really great because then you know if you ever have a time in your business that's tough, you have taught yourself how to bootstrap, so you can always kind of scale back and go back to that.
Right.
But, you know, if you start with $5 million in venture capital or whatever and you've never really had to do that, it would be hard to go back.
Right. So that sounds like another benefit of starting a business during an economic downturn. So we've got two already. What if you had to add a third, sort of like three tips or three benefits of starting your business during an economic downturn, what would you say a third benefit might be?
Well, I would say because it's fun and because you may lose your job right now because a lot of people are. So why not?
Right.
And we always say, I mean, one of the things that we've always said within Ladies Who Launch is, you know, why not you? Like, someone's going to do it, so
mm-hmm.
why not you? Like, why shouldn't you be the next Oprah, the next Kate Spade, or the next Liz Lang, or Jerry Laybourne? Or, you know, there's so much opportunity out there,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a matter of seeing the opportunity and having the confidence to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a great note to begin to open up our lines to question and answer. So we want to hear now from everybody in the audience. Please press star 1 to be connected with our operator to be directly placed into the queue for questions. So let's open it up now and take some questions.
We do have a question from Kim McSparren.
Hi, Kim.
Please go ahead.
I had a really unexpected thing happen to me on Sunday. I have been licensing my designs for almost 3 decades, but the licensing business has dried up, and people aren't paying their royalties. So I went into partnership with with a man that I had worked for when he was the president of a dinnerware company, and we started a company together. But I did it like you, on a handshake, and all I have is an email from him saying that we're going to be 50-50 partners. Well, for the past 4 years, I found that he's been cheating me and not paying me, and I was not a partner. And the line, you know, we've been fighting, but I haven't had money to sue him. And I found out he emailed me on Sunday saying that he has now taken my collection. He's opening up in a new showroom in New York. And he's presenting my collection, and he was giving me orders that I should make signs, I should do this and that. And he said, "Why haven't you responded to my email?" And I said, "Because I'm trying to think about how, you know, I still don't have a contract." And he refuses to sign a contract with me. So my questions are, how do I protect myself when I own the copyrights, but he has now produced these at two different factories who have the artwork that they can sell all around the world. And I have no way of enforcing anything at this point.
Well, look, that is a very unfortunate situation. It sounds like you've been through a lot of stress with this, and I just want to say up front that I totally empathize, and I know how hard of a time this must be right now. There's a couple things, you know, that I would think about. First of all, an email is actually good enough.
Okay.
And so if you have that email, and you can find it and it's there, you know, you had a meeting of the minds, and you
mm-hmm.
have proof through that email that you did. That's
mm-hmm.
the first thing. And secondly, I would start to think about, you know, and the first thing I would do, you know, is really think about what's the best case scenario that you want to come out of this with him. And what is your goal? I mean, do you want to just completely stop working with him, or do you want him to sign a contract and you want to continue working with him? I mean, it sounds like he's pretty – I mean, I wouldn't want to do business with the guy. It sounds – you know, it doesn't sound like a good situation. And if he's going to do this once, no matter what contract you have with him, sounds like he's, you know, not set up to really do the right thing going forward in some
exactly.
fashion, right? So
the only thing about that is that the I have tried manufacturing the goods on my own, because I have $5,000 worth of orders.
Well, can I interrupt you here for a
yes.
moment? Just because we definitely, there are lots of people in
oh,
line,
I understand, yeah.
and so we definitely want to keep it to to the basic structures of it. And it sounds like Victoria is giving you two key points. Is there
okay.
something else, Victoria, that you'd like to recommend?
I mean, I'm happy to talk to you offline if there's a way to exchange information, and I can give you some more advice, and I am sensitive to the time. But I would just say, do a cost-benefit analysis in your head of
mm-hmm.
what it means to walk away from this right now versus
mm-hmm.
getting involved in it. You mean, you're obviously creative and capable. Can you walk away and start and create a new design, get a new partner, do it all on your own, and just, you know, forget this guy, or is there too
okay.
much at stake? And only you know the answer to that. So.
Okay.
Thank you very
so
much, Kim.
We next have Frances Richards on the line with a question. Ms. Richards, please go ahead.
Hi, Frances.
Hi, Victoria. Thank you so much for the teleclass. My question is, I had started my business in 2005, and I've had a challenge, and I've done what I thought was the right thing in terms of, you know, joining several organizations, getting the certification for MBE, WBE, and it's in the construction industry, and then that particular, we know the collapse of that industry. So I'm looking at a way to kind of redefine my business. I want to keep going in the business, and I thought about actually going into the green build design, but I'm finding that to get into that and the startup is going to be really substantial. So I guess the question is, in terms of looking at another way to reposition the business to actually stay in business.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking at repositioning and redefining is a great idea. I think you're totally on the right track. I wouldn't rule out the possibility that you expressed about that you said would be a little bit capital intensive. What I would do if I were you is put together a plan a goal and a strategy around that and get some clarity around how much it would really cost and how much money you think you could make over a certain amount of time. And then I would start to talk to people in your periphery about it, including considering getting a loan from a bank and doing other things. I mean, when people see your plan, they may be really compelled to either invest in you from an angel standpoint or to help you in some way.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Francis.
Our next question comes from Tracy Fouts. Ms. Fouts, please state your question.
Hi there. One of my questions was you had stated, you know, with the economic status, is it smart to launch a business? And you had listed 1, 2, and 3. One of my questions is, with 175,000 people every week that are starting a home business of some sort, what are the things that you suggest that people should look for in a home business, and how do you suggest that they should market themselves to make themselves stand out above all of the rest?
Well, first, the product has to stand out. That's number one. So whatever your product or your service is needs to stand out. Now, it can stand out because it's more high-tech than something else. It's beautiful in a different way. It adds a certain – it takes the pain away from doing something, you know, like the paperclip or the, you know, baby Bjorn, or because you've packaged it in such a way to make it appealing, and that goes to the marketing of the product or service. You know, maybe it's that you are the only massage therapist who will give massages at midnight, and there's an audience for that. But you are right. There are, I think you said 175,000 to 180,000 new women-owned businesses starting every single month, and so you know, you've got to find a way to stand out from the crowd. There are two schools of thought out there. One school of thought is that it is easier to start a business during an economic downturn. There's a lot of opportunity, and it's, you know, you can bootstrap and all of that. The other school of thought is that it's harder for small businesses to stay in business because, you know, they aren't set up with as much of a cushion as a large business would be, and so that it's easier for a large company to weather the storm, so to speak. Being the eternal optimist and inspirer, I say go for it. And from a marketing standpoint, I would explore as many online opportunities as you can in terms of getting out there online and blogging. And OnSugar.com is a great place to go to set up your own blog website space without having to buy a domain name. They just set up a new tool, launched last week. And there's lots of things like that. You can create groups in Facebook and LinkedIn around your product and create a kind of a buzz around it that way and get your friends to sign up and tell them to forward. And then you can also create an email marketing tool for yourself. You can use Constant Contact. They're very reasonably priced and start sending out an email about your product or service, giving advice around it, providing information, those kinds of things.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Tracy.
Kamala Kleindienst has our next question. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Kamala, and I have already trademarked my company name. I've done an LLC. I've done everything that you've talked about for the most part. The hardest thing that I'm dealing with is letting go. I don't know. I've gone to the Small Business Association and through SCORE, if you know what that is.
Yes.
I don't really know how to get advice and hire the right people. You mentioned about hiring the right people and having the right people on your team. I read the book by Jim Collins, From Good to Great.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I get Inc. magazine, and I do all of the right steps, I think, and I do have a good product. My company has grown over 100% each year consecutively for about 6 years.
Awesome.
So I'm doing very well, but I live in a small area and I work out of my home. I do have an office that I go to that's some distance from my house just periodically because it's in a larger metropolitan area. But my question is how do I find and look for the right people and trust them, because I just feel like if I don't do it, it's not going to be right.
Yeah, I mean, trust is a really big thing here. I think this goes back to the point about not wanting to, thinking that you could do it all yourself better than anyone else could, and let me tell you, you're just wrong. Like, everybody thinks that they can do it, and then you get in there and you think you're doing it, but it could probably be so much bigger if you had somebody who was a deeper expert in it. So it is about letting go and trusting. And I would just pick one key person. It does, you don't have to live near this person. I mean, this person can be, think about anybody that you admire. I mean, Jim Collins, for example. I mean, you could write him write him an email out of the blue and say, look, you know, will you be my mentor? And just put yourself out there. It doesn't have to be somebody that makes 100% sense to you in the short term, but just to open yourself up to the possibilities is at least a starting point. And I think that you'll find if you just get one person to be a mentor, an advisor, or even a new hire, you'll start to see the opening for more and more.
Okay. I really think that's what's holding me back more than anything, in my company, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're holding yourself back. I mean, the only reason why your company hasn't grown more, and believe me, it sounds like it's done a great job, is it's just your mindset. You just have to open up your mind and put that trust out there.
Okay.
And so, you know, you could do it in a small way when you have somebody as an advisory to you, an advisor, it's very low risk. So,
yes.
You know, that's
okay.
One way to start.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for your question, Kamala.
We have no further questions in the queue at this time.
Okay. So, Victoria, if we have some really great questions from our audience. If you could have, like, any sort of final words of advice and inspiration for the people listening today, what would you say?
Well, I mean, I try to live by this every day, and that is to take every day at least one step to your goal. And don't take the easy step. Do something that takes you out of your comfort zone. It should feel a little uncomfortable, just like the last woman's question, you know,
mm-hmm.
that it's herself holding her back. It should feel a little strange, maybe even counterintuitive. But every day try to take yourself out of your comfort zone without any sort of attachment to a result and just see where it takes you and see how it evolves.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I think what's also really wonderful about that advice is that in a day, you can't actually do very much because it's a very small unit of time. But what happens is that if you do something every day to take yourself out of your comfort zone, something small, then eventually you end up with a big result from the accumulation of effort over time.
Yes, and by the way, that thing doesn't have to be related to your business necessarily. You know, take a run in an area that you're not familiar with, or go to a yoga class if you've never been to one, or do a headstand. You know, I mean, I always say turn yourself upside down to get a new perspective. But I mean, it can and should more often than not relate to your business, like sending the hard email, making the tough phone call. But it can also be something totally different. Cook a different meal, and you will get a new perspective. It'll bring you inspiration, and you're more likely to be successful.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much for your advice. And thank you to everyone in the audience for the great questions and for participating today. And just in closing, we like to make things easy. So our classes are recorded, and they're summarized 1 week after today. And all the notes and audio will be placed onto the website, and that's principal.com/teleclass. So just to let you know that the classes are recorded and summarized 1 week after today, so that will be next week, Tuesday, and that you'll be able to access all the notes and the audio on the website principal.com/teleclass. And also, if you enjoyed what you've heard today, please refer a colleague and tell a friend about this class. Just forward the emails that you're getting about it, or, you know, let them know that you got some valuable information today, and just let them know that they should join us on this. And I'm looking at the clock, and Victoria, I see we have 2 minutes left. And so one other piece of advice that you might offer.
Oh, my gosh. I would say to really think about to have a plan, but not worry too much about a strict business plan in the beginning. Because if you're too focused, a lot of women get very paralyzed when they think they have to write a business plan.
Mm-hmm.
And in the very beginning, what I have found is that it can pigeonhole you into not capitalizing on the real opportunity if you're too focused that you have to go according to that business plan. But if you have a plan, on the other hand, a loose action plan, that way you can cross-check yourself and see what you've accomplished every day, but still maintaining an openness.
That's great, great advice. Victoria, thank you so much for taking the time to participate and offer all of your insights and wisdom in today's call. And just to everyone, if you want to learn more about Victoria's business, it's really great resources for all of you who are out there looking to start your own businesses, already in your business and looking to grow. Check out ladieswholaunch.com. That's LadiesWholaunch.com to get all kinds of resources that will help you take your businesses to the next level. Again, Victoria, thank you so much for today's class.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, we are at time, so we are done. It's Pamela Mitchell signing off. Thank you again for Principal Teleclass.